Welcome to the Graveyard Girls podcast with Amelia and Natasha.
Hello.
And welcome to a brand new episode.
Yes.
I tried to do it in the last one and now I've forgotten. I can't be trusted.
So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, we are going to be taking a break from releasing new episodes.
Yes.
So we can work on ourselves and provide better content. But so we're not leaving you high and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to thank you for sticking around. We are releasing once Patreon exclusive episodes for the next couple of months.
So basically what we're saying is you will still get an episode every week.
Yeah.
However, the content we are releasing is the stuff that was on Patreon.
Yes.
And we have already, a little while ago, informed our people over on Patreon. Followers over on Patreon that we are releasing that Patreon exclusive content. Because obviously originally when you sign up to that, like basically you're paying for exclusive content.
Yeah.
But this content that gets released first now is the stuff that we did when we first started. So it's been out for years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the stuff we're going to release first as a free streaming. It just frees us up a bit of time to work on the next bit of the project that we want to do.
Yeah.
As well as sort everything else that we need to sort out because, things have got a bit chaotic.
Yeah, because we do want to continue with everything. It's just time. We need
mentally a break.
Yeah,
we've had a lot of things going on. We've been, like, quite ill and then trying to juggle everything in. And we got good. We pre-recorded loads of stuff and got ahead. And then we were ill and then we got stuck. And then we ended up weirdly being behind.
Yeah.
And, it's just so hard to keep playing catch-up. So we figured the best way to do it, rather than just taking a break from the podcast, which we don't want to do because we worried we were going to lose people if we have too long a break. We just decided the best thing to do was to release
content
that we've technically already made.
Yeah, because if there's some episodes that you wanted to listen to but you couldn't afford to, now you'd be able to.
This is your chance.
Yeah.
And we noticed little things like near Christmas time that all of our old Witch Trials from the year before, everyone was listening to all the free ones of those. Well, obviously the whole season was over on Patreon. That was how we plugged it at the time. So we just figured, you know what, why not release those into the free? It's obviously what people are interested in at the moment.
Yeah.
So, if you've listened to any of those witchy ones, there will be more released in the next few weeks. Like I said, it just gives us a chance to crack on with what we want to get done,
mm-hmm.
but without having to stop the podcast.
Yeah, because we are working on stuff for the podcast. It's not just
take a break. Yeah, it's just hard to manage the research, recording
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. filtering the new stuff at the same time. It's just too many things to juggle in together and then physically having the time to meet up to do it.
Yeah, because if you haven't noticed, we have started to release older episodes on YouTube.
Yeah.
It has like a blurry photo on it. I can't change that. I've tried. But if you want to just go support us on there, you can just listen on there.
Get the views. Or even just subscribe so it gets our subscribers up.
Yeah.
And then you can continue to listen on your normal podcasting platform.
Yeah, so like we'll still drop episodes wherever you're listening right now. We've got older ones coming out on mm-hmm. YouTube. We are on TikTok if you want to listen or follow us on there. We're going to be filming some more stuff for there.
Yeah, and then that will also go onto YouTube. We'll update all the Instagram and everything mm-hmm. as normal. So basically, you shouldn't notice much of a difference in terms of there'll still be a weekly episode. It's just that the actual content's going to be stuff that we've technically already released but you won't have heard.
Yeah, sometimes the episode might say Patreon if we've not felt the need to edit it.
Yeah,
so if it's weird it might be like that, but
yeah basically we're just, it's all content that we've already created. It'll be out and all it'll be is the topics will be a bit different, so there's still a few true crimey bits thrown in there but there'll just be less traditional true crime. It's going to be a bit different from what we've already done basically.
Yeah.
We'll be throwing in other topics like folklore, weird history, dark history.
Mm-hmm.
We did quite a few mini series over on Patreon, so mm-hmm. you'll notice a few of those crop up in mm-hmm. between. Like I said, there's still some crime cases we've covered in between that, so we're not completely ditching true crime. We don't want you to think that, because we're obviously aware that a lot of you who are already listening, you listen because you're interested in true crime. We're just sort of spacing.
We might have more mysteries on there, maybe.
Yeah, I think we have got a few mysteries.
But yeah, we'll try and do it in an order. So it's like one week it is true crime. The next week it might be a mystery. The next week it might be like a folklore or something. Yeah.
So we'll just jumble it up a little bit for a few months just to give us, like I said, a bit more time to get on top of everything, and then we'll just resume. Well, if it turns out people like the new way we're doing it, then we'll just tailor our future cases to cover all of those topics.
Mm-hmm.
But if people aren't quite enjoying it as much, then let us know and we'll go back to our true crime.
Mm-hmm.
So, I suppose should probably crack on with the episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so as a few of you that keep returning each week, you will know that I've been trying to sort of cover solving crime through the decades. Obviously, I've put a couple of the decades together, and we'd got to the end of, well, the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s. So I'm now going to do from 1980 to the turn of the, is it the millennium? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Turn of the century.
Well, it is a century. Yeah. So up to 2000, basically.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a lot of advances in this time, which would have made a hell of a bulky episode.
Mm.
So I am covering the forensics and advances we do, but I'm not deep diving into it, and I'm also not covering everything from around the whole world. So I'll kind of touch on bits, but
okay.
I'm doing it a little bit different. You know, before I had a strict timeline, I kind of have a bit of a timeline, but I've mixed it in with other things. So
okay.
I'm going to cover basically what I wanted to cover and what's relevant to our UK cases. I just haven't gone in. So, you know, before I discussed all the other scientists from around the world, I won't be including that
okay.
in this episode, basically. Basically, yeah, I'm just covering the UK pretty much for this last section. Okay, so it's obviously a pretty busy time in terms of forensic. DNA being the big one.
Mm.
And it's also close to home, because obviously yeah. it was worked on and discovered over here in Leicester. So as a Dr. Alec Jeffries at the University of Leicester had realised DNA contained sequences that continued to repeat next to each other. He then also worked out that these sequences are repeated, but that they were slightly different mm. for every person. He then used this discovery to help with the development of identity testing, which brings us to the early 80s. The first time DNA was used to convict a person was again here in Leicester, when two girls from Narborough had been killed. In an attempt to catch the perpetrator, the investigators asked men in the local area to voluntarily provide a DNA sample,
yeah.
which was obviously part of the research going on at the uni. They were then broken down into DNA profiles and compared with evidence at the scene. The real offender at the time had actually paid someone else for a sample to pose as him in an attempt to avoid capture. However, that failed when the guy he'd asked to give the sample on his behalf blabbed to people in the local pub.
Yes.
Mm. They then obviously reported this, and that person that had obviously tried to get away with the crime was a man by the name of Colin Pitchfork.
Yes.
The police then went and picked Pitchfork up and asked him in for further questioning and asked him to provide an actual sample of his DNA. This was then, of course, found him guilty, and he was the first person to be convicted of rape and murder using DNA profiling.
Okay.
Okay. So then the next thing that sort of crops into this time is obviously CCTV.
Mm.
Now, it has been around for a little time before this, however, it's just used sort of by private companies. So the late 80s, it was a new thing, but only big like factories and things like that, they were using it, as well as some government buildings. So it's not on your end of your street in your lampposts like it is today.
Okay.
And it took the reason they had it at the time was they added the CCTV to go with. I don't know if you remember, well, those of you that listened to the previous episode I covered in this series, we had the alarm systems that had come into use in like the 50s and 60s and 70s. Basically, the CCTV came around to work alongside those, so alarm was set off and it would then trigger the camera. So it wasn't CCTV in the terms of how it is today, where it's like on all the time. It basically, the alarm systems would trigger it. But then as they developed these things, we're now getting into the 80s, and they were sort of like, actually, it might be a bit useful to kind of have these on all the time. But they're sort of developing the technology, if you like. They have made the advances, but I don't know. It's not at its peak,
okay.
Let's put it that way. It wasn't until the very late stages of the 1980s when places like parking garages and council estates owned by local authorities started to make use of them.
Mm.
But by this time, other countries outside of the UK had been using CCTV to convict criminals, but here in the UK, we were mostly using it for security and for public transport. So things like we'd have had it in London for possible bomb threats and things like that. And for crowd control at major sporting events. So they were the main places where we sort of basically they'd have a security place somewhere and the camera would be on all the time during these sporting events, and they'd obviously manage it so they're looking out for possible, starts of fights, riots, that sort of thing. But in terms of generalised crime, we still weren't using it for that. And then if there was an incident, if there was a major thing to hear, a riot at a sporting event, and then it went to court, they would use the evidence then. But in terms of your day-to-day, they weren't using CCTV to convict criminals, but other countries were.
Okay.
So we are using it, but...
Not a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not probably to the benefit. However, by the 90s, here in the UK, we'd obviously expanded on this, realising, one, we'd watched what other countries had done and how useful it actually was. And two, we were kind of like, well, if it works there, we'll do it here. But I think part of the reason it took so long to come over here is I think a lot of people were about the whole privacy thing. Like, you lose your privacy by being watched all the time.
By Big Brother, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, a lot of people here are a bit like, no, we're not doing this. And then it's not until, I don't know, one of those people's family members gets killed, and if they'd had CCTV, they could have solved the crime. Then all of a sudden people are like, oh, actually, for our safety, it's quite a good idea.
Yeah.
So by the early 90s, we'd expanded it, and we're using speed cameras and red light enforcement. So, you know, the ones that sets the traffic light. So if you're naughty and go for a red light, it flashes you.
Yes, my sister.
Mm-hmm. During this decade, the UK spent 3/4 of its crime prevention budget on CCTV. So it went from, like, not really using it to, like, we ploughed everything into it, which benefits us now. But at the time, they were like, what the hell? All the money's disappeared. All of England's major cities had video surveillance systems in their city centres, and it... however, it wouldn't be used for facial recognition until we turn the century into the early 2000s. Yeah, because,
well, it'd be too early.
Yeah, it wasn't that advanced to zoom in. So, like, if you... It was more like... It was very, like, grainy.
Yeah, you can't really... Shadow. Yeah, it's a shape of a man. And it's like, do you recognise this man?
Yeah, and...
I think it's very interesting. Obviously, that was, like, not too long ago. But then now look at the CCTV now. It's on everyone's house, essentially.
Yeah, and you can link it up. So, like, now you think about it, you could leave one place and then you link it up with the CCTV around the corner, and you can make, like, timestamps. So you could literally follow someone's journey all the way home.
Yeah.
Whereas even in these times, like, yes, the city centres were investing in stuff, but then you might have a gap of half an hour and you've still got a gap. You've got to account for that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it wasn't it emphasis. We were a bit... It's weird. The actual technology itself, we were developing a lot of it and we were kind of advanced, but we weren't using it to solve... crime, if that makes sense. That's where the other countries were ahead of us. Because they decided... I think it was more places, you know, like America, like New York and stuff. I see they'd had a lot of terrorist threats, so that's how
you kind of need
back. I think we needed a bit. We were inventing it, but
it was a novelty. I think we were probably just like, this is what it could do, but we're not going to do it.
Yeah, and also I think there's a massive change in, like, the types of crime. So, like, after the war, we saw a massive shift in the types of crimes that are happening. Again, this is happening again now. So before, like, you'd like to think of it, and yes, the CCTV, it would have been a brilliant idea to have, but actually the types of crimes that we're doing, there were more people about, so they were being witnessed by people anyway. And yeah, I don't know, I think the whole society as a whole changed, didn't it?
Yeah, so it's always it's an ever evolving thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay, so we also have during this period, obviously, the invention of, well, it's not really an invention of the mobile phone, but basically, we already had the phone, but people are making them portable.
Those massive bricks.
Yeah, they were like, it's not a mobile phone as what you think for it today. You don't have all your data and all that stuff. It was a big brick phone, and I think pretty much only businessmen really had them. That's what I was thinking. You know when you watch, like, movies from the 80s,
it's like some businessmen huge.
In a city. Yeah.
Or they even had, like, car phones.
Yeah. They were around before, because obviously they'd had them from the police radios, but then they still didn't work very well. Like, if you went in a dip, they didn't work anymore.
It's just strange how it's like, we kind of move in this direction, and then it's like, well, that didn't work, so we don't have the car phone anymore.
Yeah. Which is, I don't know, it's weird, isn't
it? It's strange.
But yeah, so obviously they did help in terms of policing, because I read about a particular case. I won't go into the massive details of it, but basically I was reading a thing about a police officer, and he was saying about when the early mobile phones came about, like, he did have one, but they weren't, like, widely used by people, and he was at a crime scene, and basically his police radio wasn't working. So he took the phone out and threw it to a passerby to ring the police.
Okay.
But obviously he was saying if he hadn't done that, he would have been killed by the man that was trying to attack him.
Oh, okay.
So it was after that, like, lots of people coming forward and saying there's so much use for this, like, it needs to be more widespread, like, make it easier, because actually if his police radio had failed, it would have been longer before the actual police would have got there. And it just so happened that where he was, there was other people, so he threw the mobile phone to a passerby and was like, ring the police.
I think it is, like, maybe the best invention that we have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you, like I said, so it's not just for the police, but even passers-by. Like, yeah, it's easier for you to report a crime. Because, yes, we've got phone boxes, but they were few and far between. Well, there were more back then than what there is now. But, like, there were still quite few and far between. Like, you've got to run to a phone box.
And then you've got to put the money in. Yeah. And then you've got to dial the number.
It was free if you rang emergency services.
Oh, okay.
After, yeah, because otherwise...
Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. I've never had to phone via a payphone, so I wouldn't...
I think we should... When I was a little kid, we still use them. Is that why
they were always, like, if it's not an emergency, don't phone us, because lots of kids would phone... Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Because, yeah, what if you don't have the money?
Yeah, the person would die.
It makes sense.
But, yeah, so it's basically that thing of both... In terms of reporting crime, you can report it quicker because, like, you've not got to go and run and find a phone box first, in which time, like, you know, the burglar might run away.
You've got to take out the massive antenna.
Yeah.
they were huge.
It was. And like I said, it wasn't foolproof because there's still lots of areas that it hadn't covered. But as I think at that point, I think there was only two phone providers. I want to say it's something like O2 and then BT. Or, yeah, there was only two providers. So even then, like, it wasn't very... It wasn't foolproof, but it was definitely advancing. And yeah, as obviously that sort of changed. However, obviously, as much as we're good, we could now obviously contact the police, all the other stuff. It also kind of changed the crimes, or the way people were sort of committing crimes, I think, a little bit, because there was a big scandal, especially in the middle of the 90s, not here in the UK, but over in America, with the whole wiretapping and the phone tapping thing. And obviously now that we had mobile phones, it meant they produced cell data. So I want to say it was the O.J. Simpson case. It proved, because his phone was ringing in one area, it proved he was somewhere that he said he wasn't. And it became a whole like bit of a security thing. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, now you can track us wherever you go. And like, again, with the CCTV thing, it was this thing of... It was like it's scary because they haven't had it. And I think it's the case of like people now with the whole AI thing and the robot thing. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, it's so terrible.
It was like the COVID vaccines. Yeah. They were like, oh, they put in implants in those so they can track us. It's like, they track your phone.
Yeah.
So why are you carrying around your phone if you're so scared of being...
making that problem. Yeah, now, I know. Like, they're fear-mongering. And also they were probably born like after the whole mobile phone thing. But when mobile phones came out, those people, that would have been their equivalent back in those days. So the COVID vaccine people, that was them in the 80s.
Yeah, it's like, yes, you can be scared, but maybe don't falsely make an accusation if you have no possible way of either proving it. Or because then now you've just scared everyone else. And now we have a thing where people aren't being vaccinated. And it's all because of fear.
Yeah, fear mongering.
Just stop it.
But yeah, so like I said, it's helping police, but also not. In terms of being able to solve crimes, it's given them another thing that they can use to pin a criminal. So definitely in advance. But yeah, all a bit up in the air. And it wasn't widely used enough yet that it was beneficial. I also feel like in terms of police budget, it would have been quite expensive to say we want phone information. So the average policeman, if they're struggling for evidence, they're probably going to go for that. But I don't think it was mainstream. Like now, they automatically look for what's on the phone and take DNA. Even in these points, like, yes, we now had DNA, but they weren't using it in every case. It wasn't as standardised as it is today. It was classed as an expensive thing to do.
Yeah.
So that's something to bear in mind for that time.
Yeah.
So we also saw a big change in how our streets were policed here in the UK. So I'm going to go through a bit of a brief timeline here. So obviously in 1981 we had the Brixton riots, and that sees a large number of officers injured. Now this prompted a review of police riots training, their tactics and the equipment that had been provided. This eventually led to the introduction of shields, flame-proof overalls and the NATO helmets that the police use today. It's good because basically in these mass riots, up until this time, we obviously had types of riots and fights, but not on the scale of like these Brixton riots. And basically the police are just getting squashed, effectively. Which is much as I understand why some of the people were rioting for certain things, but also, you know, just because you don't agree with someone doesn't mean you should like batter them to death.
Yeah. Basically, I think people just get angry.
As much as people can be against the police also, it doesn't mean they deserve to be hurt in the process.
No.
In 1984, the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, so PACE, was brought in, and this was to regulate police's actions in England and Wales in terms of powers of arrest and powers of entry. So it's what can they stop you for.
Okay.
And also when they get to the house, like, at certain points, before then, like now, they have to sort of say they didn't necessarily need a warrant for certain things, but at this prior to this, basically the policeman could knock on the door and just come in your house. Whereas now they have to say, like, depending on what it is, they have to say, oh, we'll have a warrant. Because, like, now you can stand on the doorstep and go, you need a warrant to come in. But most people do just invite the police in, because if you've got nothing to hide, you know, nothing to worry about. But then in others, there was also the problem in the 70s of, like, police planting evidence. So people are a bit like, I don't want a policeman in my house.
Oh, and, yeah.
All the other things. So, yeah, it was quite a major change in the sense of, it kind of gave the public some security and, like, that they had a bit of control and a bit of a say in what was happening, but also it helped to regulate police. So the standard policemen, like, that were doing their job properly and not doing anything naughty, it didn't have a massive effect on them because they could still do their job. But equally the same, those naughty ones that were doing things they shouldn't have been, it made it harder for them to do the illegal activities.
Okay.
Okay. Also in 1984, we had the major mining strikes, which was obviously a massive thing here in the UK and caused a lot of problems and lots of clashes and big-scale riots. However, it did see an increase in the money put into the police and their recruitment. So, depending on how you want to look at it, obviously old Maggie Thatcher upset a lot of people. And I feel sorry for all the mining families. But, you know, also the police had been massively under-equipped before then, so because they were all getting bashed over the head and massive fights and things weren't being policed, it kind of forced them to do something about it. So, depending on whose side you're on.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, their mines would have closed eventually, but probably not in the way that she did it suddenly.
Yeah. And obviously there was, not all of them, but there was incidences of police brutality in that. But then also, did that happen? I don't know. There's, depending on how you want to look at it, is the question of, did they go in on the defensive because of the sheer numbers and they weren't actually very well equipped, so were they being aggressive to scare them off in the first place? I don't know, depends how you want to look at it.
Probably. And if there's like reports of like, oh well, we're gonna do this to them, so then they're gonna be it does depend.
I think like I said it's that, and obviously there hadn't been much training, the training changed, didn't it? I think they were so massive, the police were massively under equipped, everyone was very angry, and it was a very bad mix.
And like you said, they're probably ineffectively uneducated in how to handle a situation like that.
Yes. So, yeah, caused quite a few problems.
Yeah, it's probably just like, so that's maybe someone's first job. They just walked in from, be like, I want to be a police officer, and then no training.
Then off you go. In the middle of a riot the following morning. Then in 1985, the Prosecution of Offences Act removes the police from prosecuting all but most minor offences at court, so things like road traffic offences. Instead, this was then transferred and became the duty of the Crown Prosecution Service. So it kind of, it didn't make police's work easier, because obviously they'd see the traffic incident, where say like speeding or something, but they would report it, and rather than then the police having to get each one to the station, do all the stuff, and then them doing the questioning, it just goes basically straight to the Crown Prosecution, and then that's, like, now I think you just get like a letter through the post or something. Like, the policemen don't have to do as much work now as they used to do before. They'd have to file the whole thing. Then in, also in 1987, in the July, Midlands Police launched a brand new Midlands Air Operations Unit, because I want to say it was the last episode where we saw the first police helicopter.
Yes, it was.
And this comprised of a helicopter and one helicopter and one fixed wing plane. And it was very successful, because on the first day alone, they caught two thieves.
With the plane?
Yeah, by using the helicopter. So basically, there was a big car chase. It was going off everywhere, and they didn't have the equipment on the ground. They scarpered, they got the police helicopter out. They followed them with the thing, okay. Yeah, and followed them. So, because at first everyone, obviously it hadn't been wise ago, they had a single police helicopter, but it was probably used in like search and rescue.
Yeah.
And then people were like, well, it's very expensive, I don't know how this is going to go and solve some crime. And then the Midlands, people put money in. It was part charity based at this point, but basically they were holding out heavy on big investors to put money in, because people didn't want public money to be used. And they were saying, well, we don't really know where it's going to work. So it was a trial, and they were going to give it 9 months. And people were like, they're not really going to be able to solve any crimes. And then literally on the first day, within hours of doing it, they caught two thieves straight away. So it kind of, that's why we use police helicopters now. It was so successful in that first year in the Midlands that they decided to roll it out everywhere else. So, you know, another thing we're good at. So, yeah, like I said, very successful on its first day. Then in 1987, the genetic fingerprinting was made available when the Imperial Chemical Industries, which is a chemical company in England, started a centre that tests blood. So basically, it's making it easier for us to gather DNA, because 2 years prior to that is when the guy in Leicester University discovers the whole DNA thing, like how you can put it together.
Yeah.
Then, obviously, those girls die in 83 and 86, I think it was, in Narborough.
Something like that, yeah.
They're obviously, they're collecting the samples late 86, early 87. But then it's like, how do we process all of this stuff? And this chemical company, basically, I think they would have had talks with the same guy at uni, and they decide to put a centre together so that they can start testing this, keep it all together. Because basically what happens is, it's like with the early fingerprinting. Brilliant idea, take these fingerprints. How do you store it and manage it?
Yeah.
So this centre sort of popped up, and then it was the following year in 88 when the trial for Colin Pitchfork took place, and that's when he was eventually convicted. So it was thanks to things like these services. Basically, they've got their own labs in them, effectively, and it means they can store and test all of the DNA. So obviously, the invention of these sort of centres makes a massive difference. Basically, it makes it so that we could use DNA evidence. Because other than that, it's brilliant that guy testing it in the university, but is he going to do every single case in the whole of the UK?
No,
it's not going to work like that. And like, what do you do with the samples afterwards? How do you create a database? And
yeah,
that was the whole point. Basically, these companies were like, oh, actually, for them it was a money making thing, because of course you pay.
Yep.
But also, well, it helps society on a whole, doesn't it? So, you know, pros and cons. It's expensive, but, and needs doing, but
now it's in the long run,
yeah,
you kind of need it for everything.
Well, yeah, but pretty much
police wise
yeah. So in 1989, the West Midlands Serious Crime Squad were disbanded, which I will discuss in a moment, because I obviously mentioned them in the last series, but didn't cover them because they don't do naughty things until now.
And you called it the Crime Squad, not the Crime
Squad. Crime Squad. Crime I don't know squad. Why I keep doing this. It was like, I was having a conversation with you the other day, and it's a treasure chest.
Treasure chest.
So, I don't know why. I don't know. My brain's broken, I think. Okay. I might have been someone who could giggle today.
Anyway, it might be the R's.
Maybe. Oh, I think I'm just a bit special. In 1990, the Met removes its height requirement for constables, because obviously when we discussed in the last episode, they had to be a certain height. But that's scrapped now.
Yeah.
In 1995, Pauline Clare becomes the UK's first female chief constable. Because we already had a lot of female officers, but they weren't promoted.
Of course not.
We couldn't possibly do the job. In 1999, the McPherson Report is released, which looks into, obviously, the murder of Stephen Lawrence.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Which is a major one over here in the UK.
Yeah.
That obviously highlighted the major issue of the fact that the Met was...
racist.
Yeah. Or as they, in quotes, I can't even say this word, institutionally racist.
Ah.
Yes. It would obviously, this case later on, but not until after 2000, would become, it remains a major one when it obviously is linked to the whole double jeopardy thing and gets overturned.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've covered the little timeline now from the 80s to the 2000s, and now I want to go into detail of the West Midlands Serious Crime Squad.
Crime Squad.
Okay. So basically, it was a Midlands policing unit that operated between the years of 1974 and 1989. It was forced to disband after an investigation revealed general incompetence. I nearly said incontinent.
There might be some incontinence as well.
I mean, there could be. Abuse of power, as well as their involvement in wrongful convictions.
Mm.
This included high-profile cases, such as the Birmingham Six, so the pub bombing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the Bridgewater affair, which was the murder of a boy called Carl Bridgewater. And that ended up being a wrongful conviction, I believe.
Okay.
In its early days, the squad was involved in the investigation of the Birmingham pub bombings in 1974, which brought it its national attention. The squad continued to investigate anti-terrorism until 1979. Then in 1979 to 1980, they investigated a series of armed robberies known as the Thursday robberies. So basically, after a new anti-terrorism squad was brought in, they stopped doing the anti-terrorism and moved to armed robberies.
Okay.
The Thursday robberies, it's basically robberies that took
place on a Thursday. Yeah.
They were like big like bank heists, or they were also known as, I think the Thursday Gang is the same thing. I think it's the same ones.
Mm.
By 1982, the squad's number of arrests were on the decline, and this put them under a lot of pressure. They stated it was because criminals were becoming more sophisticated and were less likely to confess.
Okay.
Obviously, that's not really an excuse. No. They just weren't working effectively and started doing naughty things. So by the mid-80s, the squad was seriously underperforming, which pushed them to do some naughty things like interviews without recording them, interrogations, torturing witnesses. Yeah. So it's like they're underperforming, and rather than actually looking at what the issue is, they make up some bullshit excuses and then start attacking everyone.
Okay. So they're doing what your stereotypical bad police officer.
Yeah.
What you see in like films, movies.
Yeah, they're all based off those late 70s, early 80s, effectively. They're put under pressure, so they're trying to cut corners by like planting evidence or not recording interviews, and in those interviews they're saying or doing something that they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
The person then agrees to confess, they take the confession.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
In 1984, the squad began to rely on something known as supergrass evidence. That's basically an informant.
Mm-hmm.
And after a number of convictions were being overturned, it called into question a large number of the squad's officers. So they had a short period in the like early to mid-80s where they boosted some convictions in some areas and like, oh, this is weird. But then these people obviously get tried, they're found guilty at court, but then they go and get a new lawyer, and then their conviction is overturned. This is happening in the mid to the late 90s, and then all of a sudden someone's going, oh, it's a bit suspicious how all these ones that are being overturned have all been investigated by the same officers.
Yeah.
And now someone's sort of raising a few concerns.
Yeah.
In 1986, major concerns were raised, and this opened up an investigation which would finally shut the squad down in 1989. Mm. So, yeah, basically, it's quite a corrupt time. The 80s is really weird. We go from these really bad, corrupt police officers and lots of rioting and...
It's a tense time.
Yeah, it makes the police look... I mean, they were doing things that were wrong, but it makes the police look very bad.
Yeah.
And I think policing struggled, but also there came lots of pressures from new areas. You also have the start of new advances for things like the DNA, but it's not that advanced then. Yeah. So it's like we've got new stuff, we're trying to integrate it, we're changing all these acts, we've had obviously big things with Parliament.
Might be new crimes as well, because there's probably... Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of drugs at this time? And there's obviously been drugs all the time.
I think that was mainly from the 70s, but it's sort of spilling into the 80s. I feel like it's the crimes themselves have started in the 70s, but we're not really seeing the after effects of it until all these early 80s. And like I said, you've gone from that early, like the Reggie Cray thing as of the decades before, where it's like mob gang stuff. That still happens, because obviously it still happens today, but that's changing. You're now having more individual criminals, but is that because of how society is on a whole? Mass people in the 80s, we obviously had a recession, loads of people lost their jobs. People that wouldn't have previously turned to crime
are now turning to crime. Yeah.
And a lot of that petty crime that you saw back in the early, like the 20s and the 30s, that's all making a comeback.
Yeah.
And the difference
is
now...
But then again, it's the same recession.
Yeah.
Well, it's another
just a
recession,
circle,
yeah.
isn't it? And then you've got the whole thing of now, but the difference from that recession to the previous one is we've got new technology, and new ways to get away. Everyone has that. Well, not everyone, but most people have access to a car, and you've got car crimes. That wasn't a thing the time before. Yeah. And
it's Cold War time as well, isn't it? So that's probably extra tension, obviously. Not everyone's going to feel it.
Yeah,
but
politically as a country as well.
You're going to feel it.
Yeah, we were tense, which had its setbacks. And then people were like, oh, we don't like what the police are doing with this. And that put them under pressure. And I think we're going through kind of a similar thing again now.
Yeah, I think it goes around every, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, we're just stuck in this vicious cycle. So, you've got that very tense time in the 80s. And I think the 90s, you're starting to see improvements. Like I think they've sort of settled themselves down. They've realised what's wrong. They've accepted that this thing's wrong. Trying to make a movement, and now that the DNA and stuff and more is advancing, and you got your CCTV, I think it weirdly it's like one, it's more things for the police to be able to catch you out, so it's harder for you as a criminal to commit crime. However, it's making people on a whole be a bit more trustful, because you think, okay, well, we've got so much more evidence now to prove it's that person, rather than just having loads of these wrongful convictions or someone being brought into the police station and forced to confess. Well, now we have other evidence to back it up. And I know these things can still be tampered with, because no matter where you go down the line, there's always going to be someone that does something they shouldn't do, and someone tampers with something they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
Nothing's foolproof. But I think it brought back a bit of trust in the police of, like, okay, so it's not just, they're just rounding people up and they're not segregating certain people. Like, obviously it happened, but they're not just doing that because you're in a group.
Yeah.
And then the rest of you, that's like, now, okay, there's this other evidence. We're proving why we've arrested this person. Like, I don't know, the evidence backs it up a bit better now, I think, in the 90s. And you see a bit of a shift in the sense of, I think that's how the police managed to gain a little bit of trust back, was the types of evidence they were using.
Yeah.
Not that it's foolproof. I don't know, it seems a bit more... I think you had... As a person on a jury...
Yeah.
I think it was easier for you to convict a person in the 90s than it would have been in the 80s.
Yes.
That's how I look at it from the outside, because I feel like in the 80s, obviously, it's all confession-based, isn't it?
And, yeah, and I think we also have the luxury of being... white people from white backgrounds. Yeah. Our family would have never experienced, especially from the police, of like the racial tension.
Yeah.
The racial...
Which is obviously still a massive issue now. But I feel like, not that it's not as bad as it was, because any at all is still wrong.
Yeah.
But I do think the attitudes before, it was just, well, the police were only going after them and it's because they're racist. Whereas now, like, once we had these other bits of evidence... In certain cases, we could prove, yeah, but the person did actually do it. It's not a case of they're just targeting that person. For you know, before people...
But back then, they probably would be like, well, you're a person of colour, so therefore you are the one that did it.
Yeah.
Without any evidence. It's like, well, no, you can't.
It forced them to investigate more. It's like, it's weird, like, it helped them. Yep. It allowed, in certain crimes, it made it easier for them to convict them because now they had the evidence to prove it up. It wasn't just them saying, we believed it was this person. But it, the same, like, it's like, it was a good investigative... tool. But yeah, I think in terms of a lot of criminals, and I think, like I said, it improved the trust with the general public, but in terms of actual criminals, yeah, I don't think they were overly happy about the
well, don't do any crime.
Yeah, you know, don't be committing crimes you shouldn't be committing. And I think it solved, I think you saw a bit of a surge in, like, a lot of cold cases being reopened as well, because I noticed that, obviously, it's not quite in this time frame, but especially in the early 2000s, a whole mass of cases got reopened, and it's because of all these advances. So if they hadn't made those advances, a lot of these cases just wouldn't have been solved.
No.
Like I said, there's still, at this point in the 80s and 90s, they've got a long way to go.
Which I think is, like science is fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like, look at what you can do.
Yeah, I know. It seems mental, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I just think, yeah, no, I don't know. In terms of the solving crime, it's a weird period. It's a busy period. It's very chaotic. But I think that's because of all the other pressures around, like the political stuff. So, yeah, I thought it was quite important to cover. Because like I said, it's really hard for us when we cover these other true crime cases. We're like, well, why didn't they just do this? And it's very easy to get stuck in that time period. And then you think, oh, no, actually, they didn't have this then.
Oh, you mean like Tessa, piece of cloth that was next to the body? Yeah. Or not the hammer.
The one with the hammer with the blood on it, yeah.
Yeah, next to the body. But they were like, oh, no, that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. But then again, that was the attitudes at the time, wasn't it? It's just how it was. And for us, it just seems mental that they wouldn't even consider it. But then I guess at the time, whatever it was. I mean, some of it was general incompetence of the police officers. But then there's other bits where you think, but if they were taught in a certain way, did they not think to look for it and all that sort of stuff? I just think it's been an interesting sort of mini-series to look at.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of things where we looked at it and we're like, how was that a thing then? Or how was that not a thing? And yeah, it seems mad. Like, even this with the CCTV, you presume, because it's been around since, like, I think it's been around since like the 40s, but you think
there's probably more spy stuff.
Yeah, and but it was as well, it was just, and then we got to like the late 50s, early 60s, and they were using it, but only in conjunction with those alarms, so the alarms would trigger the cameras. And to us, it seems madness that because it's just how it was.
It is a rumor, and it's not over here, so it might not apply, but there's rumors that Marilyn Monroe's house was wiretapped.
I've watched it
either
lot
by
of
the Kennedys or by the FBI or the CIA, one of them, or the Russians maybe.
Yeah, because she was supposed to know something politically, wasn't she?
Yeah,
and people were saying that that's why she was killed, blah blah blah. It was, I've watched a few conspiracy things on that,
which is like a healthy conspiracy. It's not harming anyone.
Yeah, it's interesting, but also, like, there's a lot of the elements plausible which is where a lot of other conspiracy theories really piss me off, because I think, well, now you're just being really stupid, like, that's not a thing.
Because obviously people were wiretapped.
Which is, again, then when it changed from the wiretapping, that's when it then all changed, you know, the whole mobile phone thing. So everyone's like, oh my god, it's another way they can hack us. It's
and
like,
now no one can leave their phone.
But yeah, like I said, I don't know, it's just a massive shift. It does seem mental that they weren't. I just think, we obviously know CCTV's been around, but you just think, why, if they were inventing it for all these big companies, why did they not have it in the streets. But then again, it was that whole, the whole public thing. Because like now, putting up CCTV, it comes out of public money, all the ones on the streets. Whereas back in like the 70s and 80s, if you suggested that to them, they were like, no, that is not what we're spending our public money on. And it was an uproar. It was like, it was an invasion of privacy and all that thing. Whereas to us now, we appreciate the use of it.
Now, they're using our tax to put stupid concrete on the road that is not even...
Yeah, they're not even fixing the roads properly, but also the...
It's not even not even to fix a pothole. It's to fill in where the bike lane is. Yeah. They put in lots of like tube things during COVID so the bikes could go on the road, even though the road, the bike bit on the road was already there. Yeah. Now they're just putting concrete blocks there instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why?
And why, also why? We're doing the whole HS2 thing, which is already massively overspent. And
Okay.
Yeah, because we've lost billions.
Yeah.
Because that's what people are saying. It's like, why are we still continuing with it? Because there's this thing of certain places along the line, they've stopped it. And some of those people obviously lost their land and sold their houses for like pittance because people are like, your house doesn't have anything anymore.
Yep.
And then they sold it all and these people moved out and the house got demolished and then they're not doing it in that area anymore. Yeah. So yeah, those people lost their homes for absolutely fuck all reason.
Also, it was very convenient that they had to start from London.
Yeah, oh, obviously. But if you start the top down,
if you start the top down, maybe.
They're not going to do that because rich people live in the south and they're the ones that need to use something.
What, so we can get to London, what, in an hour? We can get to London in an hour anyway.
Yeah.
Great.
Basically, what they're doing is they're just taking out the bends to make it even faster. Yeah. Which, if they just ran more regular trains and put, instead of building the HS2, if they use that money and put it into the current... Yeah, and if they reopen some of the old stations where they'd stop, if they actually invested that money into staff, we wouldn't be having all these current train strikes that we're having.
Yeah.
But, you know, apparently no one thought of that. Or, well, actually, people did think of it, but it was the poor people that thought about it. And the rich people that are in London that wanted to cut their time by 10 minutes or something, they were just like, their idea was better. But, yeah, we've already spent, like...
Look at how smooth the London Underground
it's
is.
It's, like, hundreds of billions.
You've got constant trains.
Yeah. But HS2 has already cost hundreds of billions. It's already cost more now than what they said the whole thing was going to originally cost.
And all it's done
and
is from...
we've not actually even halfway through it.
London to, like, what's the city closest to London? That one.
Yeah, it has. They have made some of it improvements as far up as Birmingham.
Yep.
But not the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're not even, like, halfway through it. And they've already spent, like, triple the original budget. And, yeah. Now they've turned back on it and some bits are saying it, especially it's the bits near like Leeds and that lot, I think they basically said they're not going to do those bits anymore, so you're like, oh, okay, so,
they shouldn't have done it so like it all gets filtered down to London
place.
No, we didn't, we don't need any more in
I'm sorry
London.
But if you even when the I remember when they were projecting the times at the beginning it was going to cut it by like 10 to 15 minutes, like who the fuck can't get up 10 to 15 minutes early? And if you can't, I'm sorry, it's your own fucking fault, like
There's
it
no
really
need for
isn't
it.
Reducing it.
And it's
that much.
Still filtering everything down from the north to the south.
Yeah.
Maybe spread it all out a bit.
But
the north
we,
will have some money.
Our country, back in the Industrial Revolution, we used canals and railways. We were very efficient. Then we decided to shut half of the railways and got rid of the lines to make way for motorways. And then all of a sudden now we're like, oh no, now we want the trains. And then we're just idiots. But like, we want the trains, but we don't want to put any money in like normal trains.
I love a train journey.
I love a train journey. But you know, you can't really get one now because they're all striking all the time.
Yeah, or it's
like windy.
I just
don't get why we didn't put all that HS2 money. Because like, that money it cost, that would like pay people for like a lifetime. Like,
was it because Conservatives were in?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember when HS2 began.
It was about a decade ago. But
yeah, so when, because
Yeah. I remember still being at like college, I think, when they were discussing it. So that's just over a decade ago.
Okay.
So, but yeah, no, I remember. I don't get why instead of, well, basically it's private companies that offered to put part of the money in, but then you know it's billed out and they use public money. And yeah, basically, the amount of money that they've already put into HS2, all of the train drivers, they pretty much could have paid them for a few decades with all of that money. So basically, they could have just paid the current workers better.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Added
so
stops in and
what
more
we're
trains.
Saying is the roundabout way. We're probably going to see some more crime spike.
Yeah, it's going to be a new type of crime. I feel like I'm waiting for us to get all the riots back. You know, like you know, like the mining strikes.
Yeah,
effectively the train strikes is the start.
We've
that.
Got the trains. We've got the nurses.
And, doctors. What was the other one?
Post
that was the other
office.
One? Yeah, post office. And there was another one. Teachers.
Teachers.
And there was another one, but I can't fill off me think what the other one was. Did the firemen do one? I want to say they did do one. I think some police did
if they
well.
Want to, they can do. I mean, everyone needs more money.
Yeah. But, you know, we're spending money on fast trains that aren't really that fast.
If it was
we're
like...
so very clever.
So, yeah, I think you'll have to come back to this in, like, 10 years' time and be like, the 2000 to 2020s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. World's gone mad, Natasha.
Yeah, it's always been this way.
Yeah, we just go in these horrible circles.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but we don't have any tunnels
That's
anymore.
That's
we're not them down.
Not them down. Oh, they kind of had some tunnels for HS2, didn't they?
Yeah, that's what they're trying to rebuild because they got rid of the old ones.
Stupid.
Like, I get it. Like, when we moved from trains to cars, we were like, yeah, we're just going to be using cars and ours now. We won't need really. The trains all die out. And then actually, in reality, they didn't die out in the way. Because, like, I think, like, people thought, like, aeroplanes would be used a lot more than what they used. Like, I know now we use big companies use them to ship things around the world.
You know
but
what,
I felt
really?
Like people were thinking planes were going to be like, we just get a... You obviously can get a plane to Scotland because I haven't done it before.
Yeah.
But I think people thought, like, that's what you would do every day. Like, it was a daily thing.
What annoyed me is, I'm not sure which storm it was. I think it was the storm on Sunday. So, Aisha?
Yeah.
People flew from Manchester to London.
Yeah.
But they had to land in Germany. I'm sorry, you do not fly from Manchester to
London.
Yeah,
there was another one. It was somewhere in Ireland they were supposed to go, and they were setting off from Manchester, and it should have only been a 30-minute flight, but they ended up being stuck in the air for 3 hours. And then they ended up being... I think they ended up having to land in Leeds, which was even further away than where they originally were going.
That makes sense, because it's a different country. But going from Manchester to London...
Yeah.
No wonder why the climate's fucked, because you shouldn't be making that fucking journey.
Well, I remember when we had to
There's no need for a plane for that.
But even the Scotland one, I don't get, because...
I've done the Scotland one.
Yeah, I've done the Scotland one. But I remember this as a kid because I was 11 and we were going to a wedding. And I kind of get it because it was after school and then the wedding was going to be the following morning and everyone had to be there, like, that evening.
Yeah.
So, yes, you couldn't have driven there that quickly. But even at the time, I remember thinking, it's a bit far-fetched to go because we had to go... We couldn't...
I've driven to Scotland. It's not too bad.
It's about 9 hours from where we are.
I think it was about...
Well, it depends what road you take and how you do it.
Sure, it's not that long. Hold on, this episode end. We need to end it because it's not applicable to the story.
We met some family in Aberdeen, and then we had to go further up.
Ah, okay, it takes 5.5 hours drive wise to Edinburgh.
Okay, so not too bad.
We need to end this episode because this doesn't
Sorry,
fit.
Very distracted. You'll just have to edit it out.
Yeah, I know.
Blubbering.
But then I'm going to be like, well, where do I end it?
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's it for this episode then.
Yeah, otherwise it's a weird thing.
Yeah, we've rabbited on. In the meantime,
keep creeping.
And we'll keep digging.